Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. This is Johnny Tan, author of From My Mama's Kitchen, Food for the Soul, Recipes for Living. Welcome to my weekly From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio show. My guest for this morning is Michelle Scott. She is an expert in pre- and post-adoption strategies. Her new book, Praying Through Your Adoption, is a complete guide to creating and nurturing today's forever family. It offers real-life adoption stories, scriptures, and situational-specific prayers. Michelle and I will be discussing about her life's journey, her new book, and her current mission in life in helping couples build their dream family. Good morning, Michelle. Welcome to From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. How are you doing this morning?
I'm great, Johnny. Thank you for having me.
It's wonderful to have you. I really enjoyed reading your wonderful book. This morning's topic is very personal to me because I was adopted at birth in Malaysia by my Malaysian mom. And then when I came here to the United States, I really enjoyed and benefited from the love and nurturing that I got from my eight other moms. Collectively, the energy that I received from my nine moms from their unconditional love truly fuels my life's success. Your book offers an intimate perspective about the world of adoption. The stories told by the various families were just extremely heartwarming, and it is the definite must-read for families who have adopted children and for those who are contemplating an adoption. Well done, Michelle.
Oh, thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. Let us start by getting to know you a little bit better. Please give us a walkthrough of your life from childhood to the present moment.
Well, the Reader's Digest version, I grew up as an only child in Philadelphia. Faith was really important to our family, so I believed in God from an early age, but it wasn't until I got to college and really, you know, thought about faith as an adult that I made my own decision to follow Jesus. So I graduated from college with a degree in management information systems, and I moved to the suburbs and got married. I had a brief stint in corporate world and then in Christian ministry. And, you know, before long, I became a stay-at-home mom through Russian adoption. So that's pretty much the journey.
When you were growing up, were you familiar with adoption at all? I mean, friends that you grew up with, were there any of your friends that were adopted?
No, the only experience that I had with adoption in childhood was a friend who was adopted by her stepfather. But no, other than that, I didn't really have any experience with adoption.
Mm-hmm. When did you discover you wanted to be a writer?
Well, you know, as a child, I liked to write poems and stories, and I even had a poem submitted and published by Highlights for Children. So, you know, it was something that I liked as a child, but it wasn't really, you know, something that I considered as a career goal until, you know, I found ourselves in our adoption situation and, you know, started to write down, you know, things that would help other people.
You have some wonderful poems in the book, by the way, and I really love them. And we're going to go through one of them later during the show, but I just wanted to mention that is you have this wonderful way, talent of writing poems, so it's wonderful.
Oh, thank you.
What is the inspiration behind praying through your adoption?
Well, our adoption, I guess, you know, really started with our infertility. So, you know, coming from a place of hurt already, and then, you know, having these high expectations for our adoption, you know, we ran into some difficulties. Our adoption got delayed, and, you know, we just found ourselves pretty discouraged. So it was at that time that I was doing an online prayer vigil for Russian adoption through another organization that, you know, I realized that we weren't praying specifically, you know, for each aspect of our adoption. You know, we were praying in general, but, you know, there were some things that we could give more attention to. And, you know, I just found that praying that way really encouraged me and, you know, gave me additional strength that I needed, you know, for that last leg of the journey.
One of the things that I thought you did very, very well in the book is you were able to lay it out to whereby these are the prayers that you can apply for specific challenges that you're going through in life. And the fascinating about the Bible, as I have personally encountered myself, is in the sense that you can read the same scriptures and it applies to different situations as well. And you can come back the next day and read the same verses and yet get the different meaning, you know, and that's the wonderful touch of the Bible.
Yes, yes. That I found was really important because, like you said, you know, I had certain scriptures that were important to me and helpful to me, but when I really started to apply them, you know, to the different aspects of the adoption journey,
mm-hmm.
you know, that's where I found, you know, that I got that sense of encouragement, you know,
right.
that yes, this does apply and this can help me.
Because when you look at the Bible on its entirety, sometimes it can get confusing. Where do I go? What do I look for? And it can be overwhelming.
Mm-hmm.
And what you did was you were able to compartmentalize, you know, okay, if you're going through this, if you're feeling this right now, just go for this prayers. Go into your own Bible, because I know different Bibles have different versions and everything else. The wording a little bit different.
Right.
But the essence of the message is still the same. And so that's what I like about your book, because it helps you to narrow down, okay, skip, you know, go to page 1451 or whatever.
Right.
And that's what I like about it, because it helps people. It's bad enough that, you know, you are going through this challenge, this agony or whatever you want to call it, and then you say, oh, my gosh, let me try to find some soothing words here. And where do I go?
And, right, right.
Yeah, and you did a wonderful job with that. Did other experiences in your life help shape the writing of this book?
Well, I think I touched on the infertility, definitely,
mm-hmm.
you know, laid a foundation for, I guess, needing, you know, what I ended up putting in the book. But, you know, even after our adoption, you know, had started and we were in the process, you know, I had also been laid off right before we adopted our son. And, you know, and then trying to get over that hurt, but also adjust to being a new mom. You know, I went through a period of post-adoption depression, which I also talk about in the book. So, you know, those things really, I think, you know, became a full package for, you know, helping to shape what ended up in the book.
I like the way you transition from one experience to the other and sort of walking through, and then with the various stories from the various families, it certainly helps. What are some of the questions we need to ask ourselves when we consider adoption?
Well, I think some of the major things are, first, what age of child, you know, you are interested in adding to your family. Because, you know, the children range from newborns to teenagers. And, you know, you really need to consider what age child, you know, you feel fits into your family, you know, whether you have existing children already. And then also whether you want to pursue a domestic or an international adoption. You know, and then there's some questions that you want to ask, you know, as you look at that. But basically, you know, are you going to pursue it through, you know, say in our case, the U.S. courts or, you know, foreign courts and their laws? Also, who's, you know, going to help you do the adoption, whether you want to use an agency or a private attorney, and what kind of budget you have? Because, you know, domestic adoption, in some cases, if you go through foster care, is less expensive than, say, an international adoption where travel is involved. And then finally, I would say, you know, envisioning life after the adoption, whether you think you want to be involved, you know, in an ongoing basis with a birth mother or a birth family, whether you feel comfortable going outside of your own race and culture, or, you know, whether that doesn't suit your family. And also, you know, what types of special needs, you know, you may be facing, you know, that your child might need help with, and how that also would impact your family.
I've read in your book, and there are people that right off the bat went out and got special needs children to adopt. It's fascinating that we do have people that are very, very caring, very, very nurturing, and very loving, that says, you know, I want this specific child. And that's wonderful. And you covered that as well, too. Tell us a little bit more about that, about the decision-making process when someone goes through that process.
For the special needs? Or?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah, I agree with you. I think that that's wonderful that, you know, there are people that are so loving and caring and nurturing that right off the bat, like you said, are ready to tackle special needs. That wasn't our case. You know, and then we actually found ourselves in a position where we are dealing with some special needs, you know, things that our son needs help with, like learning support and speech therapy and things like that. But yes, I think if that's something, you know, there's people that their heart goes out to, you know, children that have not only had a rough start, but then also have, you know, these other challenges and obstacles. And, you know, I think as long as you support your, or surround yourself rather with support and, you know, whether it's professional support, but even just personal support, you know, I think that that's a wonderful thing because, you know, there are a lot of children that need homes and some of them, you know, need some extra special care.
And of course, make an informed decision, that is. Don't get blindsided, so to speak.
Yes, that is the one thing that I do mention in the book, too. You know, you need to be prepared for known and unknown situations.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
I mean, in this case, you know, a child with special needs, their documentation would say very specifically, you know, the things that you're going to be dealing with. But at the same time, there's, you know, children that, you know, may seem healthy on the outside, but then whether it's, you know, emotional or developmental challenges that they may have, you know, those are things that are not necessarily going to be specified on paperwork. And, you know, you just need to go into adoption knowing that there are, you know, just like having a birth child, there are unknowns that you may be dealing with.
What are some of the differences between domestic adoption and international adoptions?
Well, domestic, you would be dealing with either a local or state government agency within the United States. And international, you would be dealing with a foreign government and their laws. So because, you know, the laws are specific to the area that you're working with, I can't really speak, you know, in specific terms.
Mm-hmm.
But basically, domestically, the children that are available would range from newborns to teens, whereas international, the children are a little older, most likely because they stay in the system in that country first before they're available internationally.
What are some of the challenges that you have going through domestic adoptions?
Some of those challenges would be, you know, if you have an open adoption where, you know, all of the parties are known and you also, you know, can maintain a relationship with the birth mother or the birth family. You know, that can be a challenge, you know, just because you're dealing with an extra relationship, so to speak. Whereas in international, you know, they're usually closed adoptions, whether it was through an orphanage or foster care, and you're not dealing with a birth family. You know, that has its own blessings as well. So, you know, you really have to look at, you know, what you envision as best for your family. But also domestic adoption, you know, can be cheaper in some cases, because especially through the foster care system, you know, you don't have a lot of expenses in terms of, you know, an agency and fees. And like I said, with the international, you would have the travel expense. So, you know, those are some things to consider with domestic adoption. And then I guess I could also add, because the laws are different, you know,
mm-hmm.
as to when the rights are terminated for the birth mother, you know, there's a chance that a birth mother could come back and, you know, make a decision to parent her child instead of placing it for adoption. So that's also something you want to consider when you're pursuing a domestic adoption.
And then how about things that we need to consider about international adoption?
Well, I would say that would be, you know, the country and the culture that you're considering.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you have a specific, you know, draw to a certain area of the world. You know, and also the country may require that you travel there once or even in our case with Russia, it was twice. You know, so those are some things to consider you know, between the country, the travel, but also the expense of that. There are also some countries that will allow you to send an escort to escort the child back to the United States. Mm-hmm. So those are some things to consider as far as international adoption.
Can you explain to us what is safe haven delivery?
Well, we have laws here in the United States that allow birth parents or someone close to the child to relinquish the rights and voluntarily drop the child off at a safe place, say like a hospital.
Mm-hmm.
So a safe haven delivery, which I learned about through one of the families that shared their story in the book, is basically that the birth mom, in giving delivery, relinquished her rights at that time. And then, you know, she didn't have to go through the court proceedings and, you know, having her rights terminated at a later date. She just chose, you know, to go through with terminating her rights and going through an adoption placement right away.
Very interesting. That brings me to the fact that how did you get all the various families to participate in your wonderful project?
You know, some of the families I do know personally,
mm-hmm.
But most of them came through a call that I had placed out, you know, just on the internet as far
mm-hmm.
as looking for families that had experiences with adoption. And I was really touched with, you know, the people that were willing to share their stories. You know, some of them were challenges and some of them, you know, were just joys from the start. But in any event, you know, everyone had a unique perspective to share. And, you know, placing them throughout the book, I think, really just added a depth, you know, to the reader's experience.
You did a wonderful job with that because it gives people real life, real situation and diverse experience because no two families experience are alike. So as such,
right.
when you walk through the various, you know, episodes in life and adoptions, it gives people an opportunity to relate to, wow, yeah, that we just went through that.
right.
We may be going through this right now and we don't realize it and we're not alone. You know, there are people out there that are going through what we went through. So I think that's fascinating. What is the most important thing people need to know about adoption?
You know, I think adoption in general just requires commitment. You know, you're committing to opening yourselves up, you know, to being, I guess, scrutinized in a way. You know, you're filling out paperwork and getting approvals and, you know, getting prepared to parent this child that's going to come into your family. And just like marriage, you know, you're promising to love and care for this child and you're not having a biological connection in most cases. So, you know, I think just being committed to doing that and knowing up front that, you know, you might not know much about the child's past and, you know, we certainly don't know things about the future, but, you know, just making that commitment to love and to care for this child, you know, I think that's an important thing about adoption that people need to understand.
Your book covers a lot about faith and about trusting in God's movement in terms of delivering that wonderful child to you. How important is it to you and basically, I guess, to all to have faith when we go through the journey of the wonderful world of adoption?
Oh, I think faith is important, you know, in all aspects of our lives. But, you know, particularly my experience in adoption is that faith is the thing that I would fall back on, you know, all the time, whether it was, you know, the disappointments in, you know, our delayed adoption or the difficulties once we had our son home. You know, I leaned on my faith in God as a way to, you know, face those challenges and to know that I wasn't alone. And, you know, also I would say, you know, that there's a power and a purpose greater than ourselves. And, you know, that's really, I think, where faith, you know, comes in as a tool, you know, to help us in life.
Very true. What are some of the resources available to help families interested in adoption?
There's a lot of books and websites that I go to personally, but some of my favorites, there's a magazine called Adoptive Families, and they have a website at adoptivefamilies.com. There's also another website, adoption.about.com. And if listeners go there, I also have a few of our adoption poems posted there. Mm-hmm. And then finally, I would say there's Karen's AdoptionLinks.com, and she's just done a wonderful job of, you know, pooling lots of adoption resources together, you know, under one site. And, you know, that's really a go-to site that a lot of us adoptive families use.
Did you do a whole lot of research before you started your adoption process?
We did. You know, I remember going to the library and getting, you know, Adoption for Dummies book and, you know, different different things that were available, you know, because there's so many choices, you know, and I felt ill-equipped at the time. You know, my husband and I would talk and, you know, did we want to do domestic? Did we want to do international? You know, a boy or a girl? You know, there's so many things and what age. You know, even when you go down to, you know, we had asked for a child, you know, between 12 and 18 months, you know, and even, you know, the difference between an 18-month-old and a 2-year-old, you know, can be huge, you know, especially when you're a new parent. So, you know, there are a lot of decisions and, you know, I did pull from a lot of different resources. You know, I think it's helpful. You know, you can't be too informed, I guess, is one thing I would say.
What is the number one challenge for couples in adopting?
You know, I think the one thing that doesn't get enough attention is the post-adoption adjustment. You know, because, you know, like any big life experience, you know, you go into it with, you know, some expectations and, you know, even some fantasies about what this is going to be like, you know, after it actually happens. And, you know, when you bring a child into your family, it's an adjustment for everyone. And, you know, the child has to adjust to, you know, having these new parents. And, you know, the parents have to adjust to, you know, a new schedule and new demands. You know, I remember a lot of sleepless nights and, you know, people would joke with me ahead of time, you know, oh, get your sleep now, you know, before this child comes. And, you know, until you go through it, you don't understand. So, you know, I think that post-adoption time, you know, where there's all this lead up and now, you know, here it is, you know, I think that can be challenging. And, you know, if you can do as much as you can ahead of time to prepare for that, you know, surrounding yourself with encouraging people, you know, people that will come over and, you know, do laundry or clean or, you know, just play with the child while you're napping, you know, things like that. I think that's one thing that can help couples, you know, ease that transition time.
You brought up something very interesting. You cover it very well in the book. I really smile and kind of laugh at certain things that you went through yourself about. There's one story you wrote about the fact that you could not get your child out of the shopping cart, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, right. Yeah, so here I am at the supermarket, you know, a new mom, but, you know, he's 13 months old. So to anyone else, it looks like I should know what to do. And I could not get him out of the shopping cart. You know, I'm a short person, so, you know, I'm trying to lift him up and lift him up. And, you know, finally this lady came over to me and she helped me. And I felt compelled to tell her, you know, I'm a new mom. You know, we just adopted him and, you know, just to kind of save face a little bit.
Right.
You know, but, yeah, I mean, those are, you know, the things that you don't foresee, you know. And you know, it was humiliating at the time in a way, but, you know, now I can laugh about it.
That's right. There you go. I mean, it's like, yeah, gee, you know, it looks like I've been a mom for 13 months, but actually
right.
I'm a mom for 5 days.
Right.
I think those are the magical moments that sometimes when you look back and you realize that, wow, that's what it's all about, the reward, the satisfaction of knowing that I'm making the adjustments and so forth. And you're right, the excitement of having the child in your hand, and then you thought that's the end game, and that's not true. Because
right.
Welcome to motherhood for the rest of your life, because you're running on the same track as any other moms out there.
Exactly. And in a lot of ways, you know, you're going from 0 to 60 because, you know, in some cases, you know, families adopt a newborn, and they get to do all of those things, you know, during that first year. Now,
right.
we didn't. So, you know, I feel like there was a little bit of a learning curve in terms
mm-hmm.
of, you know, being that new mom and knowing what to do. But, yeah, we got through it. So,
did you encounter any obstacles during the adoption process itself?
Oh, boy, we did. you know, and I should preface this by saying, you know, our adoption start to finish probably took close to 2 years. There are people that are obviously waiting longer now that I hear.
Mm-hmm.
We know one family personally that is waiting for a child from China, and their wait has been 5 years. So, you know, it's all
Whoa.
Relative. But,
wow.
yes. But at the time, you know, the delays that we went through were really hard because, you know, we had sailed through our adoption paperwork and our approvals. You know, we met with the social worker. We went through the trainings. You know, we did everything that we were supposed to do, and then we waited. And then Russia reevaluated their adoption policies and their process, and we waited some more. And then our paperwork expired, and we got to do it all again. And, you know, so, you know, and we watched fees increase, and, you know, so just, you know, those were some of the challenges that we faced. And then even up until going to get our son, you know, we had our first trip, and, you know, everything went pretty smoothly. And then we were invited back to Russia 2 months later for the court proceeding. But on our way to getting him, our flight from Philadelphia to New York got delayed, which meant that our flight to Moscow, you know, left
mm-hmm.
without us. So, you know, my husband and I were running through the airport trying to catch this, you know, flight that they put us on to Paris. And, you know, so we get on that flight. But the man behind us, after we had settled in, had dinner, you know, started to watch the movie, he went into diabetic shock, and the plane had to land in Canada. So
oh
we blew out
God.
A flat. Yeah, we blew out a tire. They had to send up a crew in a new tire. And, you know, so 10 hours later, you know, spending that time in a Canadian airport, we're going, this is not how it's supposed to be. You know, we're supposed to be on our way to Moscow, you know, on our way to the orphanage. So, you know, we had quite a scare there. And we had, you know, friends say afterwards that that was our labor pains.
Mm-hmm,
but, you know, I didn't
mm-hmm.
appreciate that at the time. So, you know, we finally did. We had a layover in Paris, and then we did finally get to Moscow and to the train to our son's city. But, you know, that we had to catch our breath, you know, the way that that all happened. And, you know, that's why I guess, you know, I tell families to just expect the unexpected.
You wrote a wonderful poem addressing waiting. Can you please share that with us, please?
And I'm thinking you're talking about the Can You Hear a Mother's Cry?
Yes.
Okay. Sure, I'd be happy to read it. As you look into their faces, wondering who each one will become, one by one you refer them to become someone's daughter or son. I wonder, can you hear a mother's cry far across the ocean wide until the day she comes to know when she can bring her dear one home? You feed, you wipe, you dress them with tender loving care, knowing someone somewhere wants them, and soon they will be there. I wonder, can you hear a mother's cry far across the ocean wide until the day she comes to know when she can bring her dear one home? Hearing each case before you, you know there'll be more to come, children needing families and parents' little ones. I wonder, can you hear a mother's cry far across the ocean wide until the day she comes to know when she can bring her dear one home? The wait is long and tiring, but in faith and hope I press on. Soon our prayers will be answered and the waiting tears will be gone. I wonder, can they hear this mother's cry far across the ocean wide until the day I come to know that I can bring my dear one home?
It's beautiful.
Thank you.
One of the things that I noticed in your book and in reading the various stories of the various families, whether it's a mom or the husbands who wrote and shared their stories with you, is that they all tend to have a journal to write down their feelings and what they're going through and so forth. Is that something that you would encourage someone to do?
I definitely would, for a number of reasons. You know, first, I think journaling is an outlet, you know, while we're going through something, to just be able to, you know, put in raw detail, you know, how we're feeling, what the situation was, you know, because sometimes, you know, that hindsight is 20/20 phrase, you know, we can look back and see, you know, we can gather ideas from, you know, that experience and learn from it. And, you know, the more detail, the better. But I think the other thing is, you know, to just be able to share it later, you know, whether it's with your child that, you know, this is how I was feeling while I was waiting for you. And, you know, this is what we were doing, you know, while you were over there in the orphanage, you know, and to help other families, you know, I know what you're going through because I went through it and here's something that I wrote, you know, so I really think, you know, journaling can be a great tool for those reasons.
Very true. What was the hardest part in writing Praying Through Your Adoption?
Well, you know, I touched on a little bit about the post-adoption depression, and, you know, that was something that was difficult to relive. You know, it was bad enough to go through it the first time, I think, and, you know, to try and explain it to someone else, you know, and just to let those raw emotions out, you know, was difficult. But, you know, I felt it was necessary to paint just a realistic picture of, you know, once you bring this child home, it's not necessarily happily ever after. And, you know, I felt it was important to let people know, you know, just some of the struggles that I went through, you know, feeling that I needed to measure up, you know, because our home study promised that I would be a good mom. And, you know, what if I wasn't? And, you know, what if I did something wrong and they take the baby away? And, you know, and a lot of those fears were unfounded. But I think with, you know, feeling so overwhelmed at the time, you know, with my new responsibilities and, you know, and just all of the emotions that go along with being a new parent, you know, I felt that that was really important to put in the book, even though it was hard to relive.
And you have developed a system called Pulse. Would you share the system with us, please?
Sure. Pulse is basically a series of 5 questions that you can ask yourself, you know, when you're going through a difficult time and you find yourself in challenging situations. Basically, the 5 questions are, am I letting go of perfection? How can I gain better understanding? Am I taking time to love? Where can I turn for support? And where can I find encouragement? And basically, you know, I take the letters in the word pulse, and, you know, so those last words spell out pulse.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, basically I wrote it in hindsight after, you know, I was able to pinpoint some of the areas that, you know, maybe I could have had some help in. You know, as far as perfection goes, you know, I wanted to be the perfect mom. And, you know, just letting go of, you know, what we might classify as the perfect mom. You know, I mean, our son Noah needed me as his mom, you know, not necessarily an idealistic version of a mother. You know, and God knew when he placed him with us, you know, that we were, you know, in essence, the right fit, you know, but just letting go of that idea of what perfection looked like. Also, you know, about gaining better understanding. You know, I mean, I think there's times where, you know, we can pull from, you know, whether it's prayer or books, resources, you know, other families, you know, just understanding the situation that we're in and maybe, you know, looking at it in a different way, trying some new techniques. And then the next thing about, you know, taking time to love, you know, I think I was getting caught up in, you know, the job and not the joy of parenting.
Mm-hmm.
And,
mm-hmm.
you know, just taking time to, you know, sit on the floor, play with him, you know, even if I was tired, even if, you know, I was overwhelmed. But, you know, just letting go of, you know, the tasks of motherhood and just trying to enjoy, you know, being
motherhood.
A mom.
Yeah.
Exactly. The fourth area about support, you know, I think if I had set up different support systems ahead of time, you know, like I had alluded to before, you know, someone to come over and do laundry, someone to, you know, sit with him and play while I took a nap. You know, I mean, we don't always know what we need when we need it. So, you know, that's where I'm trying to encourage people to just, you know, look around them, you know, see what kind of support and help you can, you know, engage and, you know, and take advantage of it. And finally, the encouragement piece is, you know, again, just, you know, the prayer, the scriptures, you know, the other people. You know, I think we don't pat ourselves on the back enough. You know, I think we do a better job than we give ourselves credit for. So, you know, just having people and ways to encourage yourself, you know, I think that that's really key. You know, because I think, you know, the more we take care of ourselves, then the better able we are to take care of our families.
Wonderful insights. One of the things that I noticed when you mentioned what you had just said is that, of course, if you are a birth mother, you went through a process of basically conditioning yourself for 9 months, so to speak, until the child is born, and so you have that ramp-up time. Whereas when you adopt a child, you really were on your own. You don't feel anything, although there are anxieties at times, the things that you were going through, and in your case, what I gather, the underlying current is, wow, I want to be the best mom I can. And then you got caught up in that track of, am I doing the right thing? I'm preparing everything, so you fail to see what's in front of you right now, right this minute, and enjoying it, because you're continually trying to, you know, oh, I got to do better and better. And so we're always thinking about tomorrow, for lack of a better term here, and not the present moment.
Right, right. And that's something I struggle with personally, but also I think, you know, you can apply that to adoption, like you're saying, you know, because there are so many hurdles to go through just to get to the point where you're waiting for the child. You know, you have to prove, you know, that you're financially stable, that your home is safe, that, you know, your marriage is intact. And, you know, so you're constantly proving yourself. And then when you get to this point where, you know, I don't want to say the approvals are over with, because, you know, we still had to, you know, for the next 3 years after the adoption, you know, report back to our social worker and to Russia, you know, that we were doing well as a family.
Right.
But, you know, when I guess, you know, once the child comes home, the pressure is, you know, eased a little bit in terms of, you know, now you're supposed to settle in as a family, and, you know, the pressure should be off, you know, in terms of proving to everyone. And, you know, I still wanted to carry that through. You know, I still felt the need to prove to everyone, you know, hey, I can do this. And yeah, I think, you know, you bring up a good point about, you know, just letting that go and, you know, and just enjoying it.
Well, not only that, it's about the process of shifting gears. I think the intensity is still there, but it's on a different track now. You're shifting the gears.
Right, right. Because once the child is home, you know, most of the focus should be on, you know, the child and what the child needs. And, yeah, and I, you know, had the tendency to still, you know, how does this reflect on me? And I think, you know, in parenting in general, you know, if a child's screaming in the supermarket, are you, you know, correcting the child because the child needs to know that that's not appropriate? Or are you, you know, so embarrassed that, you know, you're worried about how it reflects on you as a parent? And, you know, I think that that's a challenge that any parent faces.
Right. One of the things you talk about, finding the support group for being a mom, and that's a wonderful idea, because I think that's just amazing. And one of the stories that you have in your book, which was actually, to me, is very exciting, is that it's about creative funding. Tell us a little bit more about that story, please.
I'm trying to think of which one, because there's so many people in the book.
How they raise money to adopt Cola.
Oh, that is Jill Savage. And their story, Yeah, they had a lot of interesting ways to fundraise for their adoption. The one thing they did was their daughter, you know, that was already in the family, their birth daughter, raised money by cooking, you know, their favorite recipes, and they took orders from other people, you know, for these recipes and for, you know, the finished product. And, you know, that was a neat way for them to, you know, share not only, you know, their adoption experience and have other people help them fund it, you know, but also just share a part of their family, you know, those favorite recipes and, you know, and help other families, you know, who could take part and enjoy that food. So, you know, they did that. I believe they got an adoption grant as well. You know, that's also something that's mm-hmm. available to people. There are resources out there, and I'll be posting some of that sort of thing on my website as well. But there are companies and ministries that pool money together and, you know, make that available to families who, you know, need some financial assistance in order to complete their adoption.
How interesting. What would you like your readers to gain from reading your book, Praying Through Your Adoption?
Well, you know, I think what I set out to do was, you know, to help families walk by faith through all the unique aspects of the adoption experience. You know, so what I really hope that a reader would gain is, you know, some insight into the world of adoption, especially, you know, if this is their first experience with it. But, you know, also just, you know, the strength and encouragement that comes from the prayers and the scriptures and the stories that people contributed to the book.
And again, although it is about how one relates the scriptures to adoptions and how to find solace in that aspect, this book has a broad brush stroke that applies to everyone because it gives you the comfort in knowing that you're not alone out there, that there are families out there going through what you're going through. And somehow you can relate to their stories to you and what you're going to be expecting and so forth. In addition to that, too, what I like about the book is that you have a tremendous amount of resources in there, talking about the financing side of it, for example. I don't think that a lot of people out there realize that financing is available, not in a loan standpoint of view, but there are a lot of organizations out there that really promotes adoption.
Right. And, yeah, that is an important point to bring up because, you know, adoption, as we talked about, can be expensive. You know, there are a lot of fees involved. And, you know, families need to know that, yeah, there are organizations out there that can help. And, you know, even just to give ideas for fundraising, you know, that's where I think the adoption community is just, you know, beautiful in terms of coming together, you know, to help support each other. And, you know, I think a lot of us realize that adoption is not going to be for every family, but, you know, I think people can pitch in, you know, in whatever ways they can, you know, if it's not bringing a child into their home and their family personally, you know, maybe helping another family that's, you know, looking to do that.
Where can someone go to buy your book and get more information about you and keep up with your latest happenings?
Well, I would invite people to visit my website. It's michellecscott.com, and it's spelled MichelleScott. And, you know, what I try to do on the website is, you know, put some resources up there. But also I do have links if anyone's interested in purchasing the book or even contacting me personally. You know, I'd be happy to answer any questions or offer any encouragement that I can.
Your book is filled with quotes and prayers. Which one is your favorite?
Oh, you know, there is a quote. Let me grab it. Derek Liu is an adoptive father and an advocate for orphans. He has since passed, but he and his wife, you know, had adopted several children. And she continues to work in the adoption movement. And he had said, "My friends, adoption is redemption. It's costly, exhausting, expensive, and outrageous. Buying back lives costs so much. When God set out to redeem us, it killed him. And when he redeems us, we can't even really appreciate or comprehend it." And, you know, I think his words capture a lot. You know, there are a lot of aspects to adoption. There's loss, you know, in terms of the birth mother and the child's, you know, that initial relationship. You know, so the child comes into your family with loss. You know, and there's sacrifices, you know, the birth mother, you know, placing that child for adoption, you know, means that she sacrificed, you know, her future, you know, relationship with the child. But also the adoptive family has sacrifices, you know, whether that's financial or just situational in, you know, caring for this child that's new to their family. But, you know, I think the rewards, you know, outweigh all of that. And, you know, providing families for orphans, you know, you just can't put a price tag on that.
Wonderful. I like one of your prayer points very much. It reads like this. Loving Father, so many orphans need families, and it seems right to open our hearts and our home to a child. Please show us this is your time and your will. If so, give us your strength for the process ahead and your love to care for a child we did not birth. We look to you for wisdom and direction for our family. I like that very much.
Thank you. Yeah, I think that does, you know, touch on many aspects of, you know, considering adoption. And, mm-hmm. you know, it is a process, and, you know, there's that element of, you know, God's timing and God's plan, you know, for the individual family and for the child. And, you know, I think a lot of the families that contributed their stories, you know, touch on the fact that, you know, God orchestrated their adoptions in such a way, you know, that the right child was placed in the right family. And, mm-hmm. You know I can speak to that personally, but, you know, that is interwoven throughout the book as well.
How has writing this book impacted you personally?
Well, you know, I didn't set out to be, you know, a full-time writer and speaker. So, you know, it was interesting that, you know, this project was really the catalyst, you know, that got me into a new career, so to speak. So, you know, that's one way. But also, you know, I think just being able to share our experience and, you know, meeting other families and helping other families, you know, I just, you know, I feel very fortunate to be able to do that.
If you have to do things all over again, were there things that you have done differently?
You know, more often the question I get is, would we adopt again?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, first I would say to that we would adopt again to adopt our son Noah, but we're not necessarily interested in, you know, pursuing an additional adoption.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, with that said, I think, you know, looking back, I don't think we would do anything differently because we're secure in the outcome. You know, our son was meant to be our son, and, you know, I'm so proud to be his mom. So, no, I can't really pinpoint anything that we would have done differently.
Mm-hmm. What can we expect from you in 2011?
Well, you know, a lot of this year will be devoted to, you know, telling people about the book and, you know, helping families that are either, you know, interested in adoption or, you know, already in the process. But, you know, also I have a blog at mommyforward.com, and, you know, I really hope to use that and the book to encourage women and their families. And, you know, I just look forward to more speaking opportunities, you know, maybe some online events, and just offering resources that will help people.
What are some of the follies, and I'm talking about follies here, looking back in the process once you got your son here to the United States and you went through, and it's almost like the things that you encountered at the supermarket where you couldn't get him out of the shopping cart. What are some of the other wonderful stories that you went through? Well, it was not so funny at that time, but yet looking back, you know, it's like, oh, wow.
Well, you know, the one thing that sticks out to me, you know, and it, I guess it wasn't that big of a deal, but, you know, I think in the rush of getting him ready and, you know, we were heading out the door, we actually forgot to put shoes or socks on him. So that was a little embarrassing because, you know, we showed up at the hospital. He was scheduled for blood work. That was, you know, pretty routine for bringing home an internationally adopted child. Mm-hmm. But, you know, so we show up, you know, we're all proud. We have, you know, our stroller, our baby bag, and, you know, and then, you know, we look down and he has no shoes or socks. So, you know, that was funny. But, and I'm trying to think. You know, I think we just had things like that where, you know, the diaper bag is overpacked and, you know, you know, maybe that's something I would have done differently, you know, probably packed less. But, you know, as a new mom, you know, you think, you know, well, what if I need, you know, X, Y, Z while I'm on the road, you know, so you have everything from, you know, the diaper rash ointment to, you know, the drops to help with gas and, you know, digestion. Mm-hmm. So, you know.
One of the things that you mentioned, too, is quite interesting in your book is when you had the hospital visit where the nurse kept on asking about that blonde hair.
Oh, yeah.
I thought that was funny. That was really funny.
Yeah. You know, when you adopt a child that's, you know, a similar culture to yours, you don't expect that you're going to get, you know, questions about, you know, that your child looks different, you know, because mm-hmm. our son actually looks a lot like my husband looked when he was a child. Mm-hmm. You know, so we don't get a lot of those questions. We don't stick out in a crowd. But, yes, the situation that you're referring to, it was an office visit for myself. And, you know, I had Noah along with me. And the nurse kept asking him directly, you know, and he wasn't of speaking age yet, you know, but she was asking him, you know, where did you get that blonde hair from? And, you know, where did you get that blonde hair from? And, oh, you know, it was taking everything inside of me, you know, not to say, you know, nasty things, because I really didn't want to talk about the adoption at the time. You know, she was a stranger, so to speak, so, you know, I didn't feel like I owed her any explanation. You know, we were just a mom and a son, you know, out for, you know, an office visit. But, you know, part of me wanted to tell her that, you know, I didn't know who his birth father was and, you know, to see what her reaction would be to that, you know, because that would have put her on the spot. But, you know, I refrained and, you know, even though it was true, I didn't, you know, want to look like, you know, the milkman had been here or, you know, whatever.
Right,
so,
right.
You know, I just, yeah, I let it go.
I thought it was funny because you used the word, you know, oh, my gosh. Am I coming across as being promiscuous?
Right, you know. So I think I ended up just telling her that, you know, my husband had that color hair when he was young. And, you know, what that did was, number one, you know, I was telling the truth because, you know, I didn't refer to my husband as his biological father, but, you know, just my husband had that hair color, and that was true. And, you know, but it also just, you know, it quieted her down because it, you know, it satisfied her curiosity, but I didn't need to, you know, elaborate on the adoption. And,
right.
you know, I think that that's something, you know, that each family, you know, evaluates, you know, as time goes on of, you know, how much information do we want to disclose? Who do we want to disclose it to? You know, our son has known from, you know, day one that he was adopted from Russia and, you know, that he has a Russian birth mommy and, you know, but, you know, we don't necessarily need all of his information out there, you know, for the public. So, you know, there are some things that you keep private.
Right. Do you have the recipe for living to share with our listeners this morning?
Well, you know, I love that you asked this question. And, you know, I had to think about it because, you know, I'm someone that loves to collect quotes and, you know, sayings and verses. But, you know, we actually have a stone outside our front door, and it just simply says, share faith, offer prayer, and gather hope. And, you know, I really just think faith, prayer, and hope are three ingredients, you know, that are important for a successful life. So that's the recipe that I'm sharing with your listeners today.
Michelle, fantastic. That's short, direct, sweet, and it's so true. Thank you for the great recipe for living and for spending this hour with me on From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. To all our listeners, thank you for being with us. Please join me next Tuesday morning. My guest will be Mia Radrick. Known as the Mom Strategist, she is the best-selling author of Time for Mom, Five Essential Strategies for a Mother's Self-Care. Mia and I will be discussing about her goal to empower 1 million moms to practice better self-care by December 31st of this year. For additional information about this show, future shows, and to receive a free recipe for living, please go to FromMyMamasKitchen.com. Thank you for listening and have a great week. Michelle, thank you again and have a great day. Bye-bye.